Good morning, or maybe better already, good afternoon. I'm going to tell you about some of the hot topics which are rather heavily debated now, and which are actually the main problems discussed in our workshop. And not only workshop, but probably you know from 10th till 14th of this month, we had also the conference here. And actually, I gave something like a concluding remarks at this conference. And already at that time, I tried to sort out for myself, first of all, but maybe also for other people, what are the highlights, what are really the growth points and all these things in our business and our related electron physics. Actually, you probably may know, maybe not of you, not all of you are indeed working in condensed matter physics, but it's actually very hot topic and very important one, because say, for instance, among materials which we are dealing with are such important materials like high-TC superconductor, all colossal magnetic resistance manganites, and maybe more recent fashion, and I will come to this point, but you already heard about it already, something about multiferroics, also frustrated systems, and somewhat older topics, but still, well, a lot of interesting things going on, and not really clarified all the details, at least. It's metal insulated transitions or mode transitions. And last but not least, all different types of magnetism also belong to our realm, to our field. Now, I'm in a little bit difficult situation, because when Leon first told me or convinced me to give this talk, he mentioned that it would be good if I speak about orbitals. But then what I did, I looked at what he and Jeroen van den Brink already spoke about in the first kind of general meeting, this lunch seminar, and I found out that they already spoke a lot about orbitals. And that's why I changed a little bit my what I'm going to speak about, and I will rather try to kind of make a more general overview of what is really this field, especially because there are many new people here in the sister program. And, but I'm afraid that some of the things will necessarily overlap. So in the beginning, I apologize, maybe a member of our program, I will have to give kind of a crash course of what correlated electrons are. But it will not take more than 10 minutes, so you don't have to worry much about that. Now, actually, in this field, that's not really a new field. It started, well, maybe in more or less this form, well, maybe in the 60s, 70s, but became especially popular after discovery of high-TC superconductivity, and since then, it always produced new surprises. And it's connected both with the fact that many of the basic phenomena which we have in this problem, and which were actually formulated already long ago, are still not solved. But also, more important even, that there are new and new interesting materials, which, say, materials people produce, and also new experimental technique, very important ones, which allow now to address some of the features which previously were mostly a kind of speculation. In particular, for instance, people already studied magnetism long ago and also magnetic structure by neutron scattering, but as to orbital physics, as to orbital ordering, only very recently there appeared some experimental tools, experimental methods, which allow to probe orbital ordering directly. So that was actually the main aim of our program, which is running now, just to address this fundamental problem. And specifically, actually, these basic models, they were formulated already quite a while ago. And as I said, even in this basic problem, many things are not yet understood. But very important is just to try to make models realistic. That's actually the motto of our problem, I would say. How to make models realistic. And for that, we have to include such details as kind of details of atomic physics, all the orbital physics, multiplate physics, and so on. And I will try to tell you some of the examples, what it can give you, what these details can give you. It's not really details. The point is that if it would be simply some technical details, it wouldn't be so interesting. But it turns out that when we go from simplest model to somewhat more realistic model, like models including orbital degeneracy, including some more complicated type of lattices, like say frustrated lattices, then it turns out that there appears a lot of new physical phenomena, completely new phenomena. That's actually what makes this all these fields quite interesting. Now, just to the business, actually the most interesting and the most important phenomena in the field of correlated electrons occurs just because we are dealing with many different degrees of freedom. What are degrees of freedom we are dealing with in solid? First of all, charge. Okay. Now, then electrons, they of course have spins. Now, if we are dealing with realistic systems and a real system to which we apply all these concepts, it's mostly transition metal compounds, maybe to a lesser extent in our program, but also very important rare earth compounds or actinides. And they, besides these charge and spin degrees of freedom, they also have orbital degrees of freedom. And of course, everything happens in the crystal lattice, so we don't have to forget that there is always lattice in the background. And coupling between all these different degrees of freedom between them, but also with the lattice, that's actually what determines all this rich physics. Now, charges. There are two general ways to describe electrons in solids. And I will just come very quickly to this point. This will be my crash course, but just a general scope. Usually when we consider just a normal system like metals or maybe even semiconductors, we describe motion of electron periodic potential, and then electrons are described by more or less plane waves, weakly interacting. And this gives rise to an itinerant electron or metal. But important other effect, that's actually going from charges. Important other type of states, and that's actually what we are dealing with, is when the charges or electrons become localized, and that's actually give rise to insulators. Not all insulators, but what we call MOT insulators. MOT insulators. And between these two kind of types of solids, there is of course very important problems of mode transitions between them. Mode transitions. But I won't speak much about this metallic state. I will mostly speak about these mode insulators and a little bit about mode transitions. Now, if we are dealing with localized electrons, then what can happen with charges, generally speaking? In principle, there may exist charge ordering of different types. Now, what is charge ordering? That's actually charges, which is electric, if you like, monopoles. They may order. That's charge ordering. Just use nicer color. Charge ordering. Now, then with charges we may also have electric dipoles. That will be next one. Monopole, then electric dipoles. And these give rise to or electric polarization or ferroelectricity. And until recently, by the way, this was kind of a field which did not really couple much to the other parts of this physics of correlated electrons, but very recently actually that became very fashionable, and I will come to this point later. And the third one is, what is the next one? Electric monopole, electric dipole, and electric quadrupoles. And this actually turns out that this electric quadrupoles is nothing else but orbital ordering. or it's related to this one. So this orbital ordering is very strongly coupled, and it's actually nothing else but this quadrupole ordering. Now, spins. The spins, of course, we know that it's all different type of magnetism. Now, what are the links? What are what is interplay? What's important interplay? Of course, this magnetic ordering, if there is charge ordering, it only also influence say magnetic ordering and vice versa. Now, it's also known that orbital ordering also very strongly influence magnetic ordering and vice versa. There's strong interplay. And once again, of course, from lattice we have to go everywhere. Often we can forget it, but very often there are also very important effects connected with interplay of these spin degrees of freedom with lattice distortion, or charge degrees of freedom with lattice distortion, orbital lattice distortion. All these things has to be remembered at least at the later stage. And as I said, until recently, this realm, this field of ferroelectricity kind of existed separately. It was considered mostly as a classical physics, like, say, for instance, polarization catastrophe, very large polarizability of certain particular systems, and instability giving rise to electric polarization. But recent development is actually very interesting effects connecting this ferroelectricity and magnetism. That's actually will be a realm of multiferroids. Okay, that will be a kind of more or less general scheme, and I will try to fill more or less kind of one by other what we know about these things, what are the problems, and how does it look like. Now, but first, let's kind of let me tell you very quickly, and this will be my crash course actually, what is really a mode insulator. And I will just consider simplest model, and I will introduce also some mathematical description simultaneously. Okay, this crash course. Consider hydrogen atom. That's actually potential well, and for instance, one S state. Only one S. Now, next one. Consider two hydrogen atom, hydrogen molecule. One level here, if they are not too far away, there is possibility of certain tunneling across this barrier, and as we know, this tunneling leads to splitting, so we have, say, bonding band here, anti-bonding band here. So altogether, two sides to two levels. Now, next, consider the chain of hydrogen atoms. Say, for instance, N atoms. We have N atomic levels, which will be split into N levels, which will give me finally the band. And description will be, I have, say, site I, and I have hopping bit of electron between site I and site J, nearest neighbor, for instance. C dagger I, C J. I remove electron from site I and move it to site J. And I also have to remember that there exists a spin. That's actually my kinetic energy, if you like, hopping of electrons. And if I transform it into momentum space, then I have, as always in one-dimensional case, for instance, 2t cosine k, c dagger k sigma, c k sigma. Now, usually people just put this minus sign here. Why? It's simply convenience for me, for instance. So my energy spectrum, energy as a function of momentum, will be simple cosine, and I want that minima would be at k equals 0. So for that, it's better to have this sign minus here. Now, I have n sides, I have n levels, so I have altogether n quantum levels here, and at each level, according to Pauli principle, I can put two electrons. So I have altogether possibility to put two n electrons in this state. Suppose now I have exactly one electron, n equal to number of electrons divided by number of sides is equal to one. Now, I have to fill, if electrons don't interact, I have to fill one electron, one level after the other. each level I fill by two electrons, and if I have number of electrons equal to number of sites, and I have two end places, and I have only n electrons, I will fill it up to this level, up to the middle of the band. This will be filled level, this will be empty level, system will be a metal. Now, it will be a metal, and it does not matter actually what is the distance between the atoms. But suppose I take these hydrogen atoms and put them 1 meter apart. Of course, overlap will be exponentially small, Hopping matrix element will be very small, band will be very narrow, but still, formally, it should be a metal. And of course, everyone understands that it's stupid. Hydrogen atoms put 1 meter apart, they are simply atoms, and there will be no metallic conductivity. So what's wrong? What is wrong, actually, is the following, that in hydrogen, in such a situation when I have n hydrogen atoms, we know that that will be ground state will contain exactly one electron per atom with certain spins. I just don't want to specify spins yet, but for instance I just put spins at random. And if I want to create charge carriers, I have to take one electron out of, for instance, this side, leaving a hole in this place and putting it somewhere else, putting it here and creating doubly occupied site here and empty site here. And if I manage to create this state, then of course actually nobody told me that this hole should be here, that electron can move here, and also as this electron can start to move, then I will create charge carriers, electron charge carriers or doubly occupied sites and hole charge carriers. But to make this state, I have to take into account that there was already one electron here. And when I want to put second electron, it will repel strongly from this one. And then it will cost me certain energy. I gain some energy because after I created such electron hole pair, this electron can move easily, and I gain something over order of bandwidth, kinetic energy, and then kinetic energy of the hole. So I gain maybe twice kinetic energy, but I lose repulsion energy. So I have to add here at least this on-site repulsion, which is usually called U, and I up and I down. Or I put it also here, U and I up and I down. And my energy cost is this U, and my energy gain is something of order of T. And then if U is much bigger than T, of course, I will lose much more than I gain, and then this process would not occur in the ground state, and system would remain insulating with localized electrons. And simultaneously with localized electrons, I also created localized spins. So this system, after I made a localized electrons, it will be also strongly magnetic. That's actually what we call mod insulators. Now, what it means that if I, for instance, plot here effective strength of interaction normalized to bandwidth, for instance, then if U is small, I have metal here. If U is large, I have, or U over T is large, I have this mod insulator. And there will be some crossover somewhere in the middle, U over T critical, in which there occurs transition from metal to insulator. That's actually this famous mod transition. Fine, that's actually almost the end of my crash course, but what I want to stress that even mathematically, this situation which is described by this model is actually called Hubbard model. That is simplest model describing this phenomena. And mathematically, I am interested in a situation when this term is bigger than this term. And you may immediately understand that actually a situation which is quite opposite to everything we are used to in quantum mechanics or in elementary particle physics and field theory and so on. Because this is quadratic term, and this term is actually quartic. So I can rewrite it U, C dagger, I, C, I, up, up, C dagger J, C J, down, down. Oh, C, sorry, same side. I down. And usually perturbation theory, we treat this term as a zero Hamiltonian, and we want to treat this interaction as a perturbation theory. All Feynman diagram technique is based on that, everything. Here a situation just the other way around. I just rewrite maybe here again. H, which is say minus T, T dagger C, plus U schematically, and N, and or C dagger C, C dagger C, and this is actually should be treated as my bare Hamiltonian, and this may be treated as perturbation. So all perturbation theory is upside down, so to say. And that's why none of standard Feynman diagram technique, nothing really works in normal case. But in principle, I can use perturbation theory in H prime over U, or in T over U, which is much less than one. One of the simple consequences of this perturbation theory I can just tell you right away, and that's actually important. So suppose I just take only my bare Hamiltonian as and I minimize this one. This is minimized when there is no doubly occupied sides. That's exactly my Mott insulator. So my ground state will be exactly one electron per side. But if it's one electron per side, still there is some spin degeneracy. Spins are not fixed yet. And spin degeneracy is lifted by this term hopping back and forth in second order. How does it happen? I may have two situations. I may have two neighbors with spins parallel, or I may have two neighbors with spins antiparallel. Now, my bare Hamiltonian, which is H0, it's minimized both, and that's because I don't have doubly occupied sides. But perturbation theory in H prime would give you the following process. This electron may hop to neighboring and back in second order, or this electron hop to neighbors and back. But here, because of Pauli principle, this process is forbidden. In principle, you remember, of course, that in quantum mechanics, second order perturbation theory always give you negative energy gain. But here, I don't gain this energy, so my energy gain here is zero. Here, however, this process is allowed. Electron can virtually just hop to neighbor and back, partially localized. That's also good because of Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Here it's not allowed to delocalize and decrease kinetic energy. Here it's allowed to delocalize and decrease kinetic energy. That's why in these simple systems, simple Mott insulators would be anti-ferromagnetic, because here I have this energy gain of order of, say, minus T square over U. Actually, two times like minus T square over U. And effectively, it means that in this limit, when I have exactly one electron per side and U is much bigger than T, instead of my original Hubbard model, I can go to effective model, which is, will be pure spin model, and which will describe antiferromagnetic coupling, 2T square over U, S I, S J, nearest neighbors. Okay, fine. That's actually the end of this extended introduction. But you see, where is the main problem here? The main problem is here that if my interaction is weak, I am dealing with metals, then my normal perturbation theory works. I know a simple ground state. I know the system may be metallic, or in a system like germanium, it may be also semiconducting. Fine. But at least I know my starting point. It is easy. In a situation with strong interaction, I have to start with something which looks not like itinerant electrons, plane waves, but rather like atomic states. This state is simply a hydrogen atom. But if it's not hydrogen, but if it's iron, that's really atomic states which are present here. And this crossover, for instance, from this state to this state, is actually a crossover from itinerant description, from simple plane waves, to description which is, in fact, atomic. And even statistics, if you like, changes, because here I am dealing with simple Fermi statistics, and here I am dealing with atomic statistics, if you like, classical states. And when I am dealing with atoms, then I already have to worry about all atomic physics, like, say, what are atomic multiplets, what are, say, for instance, orbital occupation, and so on and so forth. And that's actually what makes this physics very rich, but also very difficult. This interpolation between simple itinerant description and a description which takes into account all the complications of atomic physics, that's actually what makes it very rich. And that's what I will try also to illustrate later on, where this atomic physics comes in and in which form.
What are typical values of U over T critical?
Well, typical values of U over T critical is something of order of, say, 4, I think. That actually comes from approximate calculation, but also numerical calculation. And one of the most powerful technique is the one which is developed relatively recently, which is called DMFT. It's actually developed, well, maybe 10 years ago about that. And I think it's very powerful method which allows to obtain this quantity also. Actually, it turns out that if you don't take into account magnetic order, then this transition always happens to be first order transition. But so there is actually not one critical value, but actually there are two critical values and phase diagrams look something like this. If I plot temperature here, first order transition here, but there is overheating, overcooling, so to say. But something of order of, say, 4, if I remember correctly. Maybe someone can correct me if you remember better, but something of this order. Okay, maybe just one word about the story, which is relatively old, but which immediately illustrates all the complications which you can have here. Again, consider this simple Hubbard model, and I explained to you that in simplest case, it looks like I have localized states, and I have spins which predominantly prefer to be antiferromagnetic. Now suppose I created extra electron or extra hole. I put, say, for instance, one extra electron here, or and then I told you that it's not fixed actually whether it's here or it's on a neighboring side. It can, in principle, move. But if you look more carefully, then it looks something strange happens. It wants to move, but if it wants to move to the neighboring side, but there is already the same spin here, so it will be blocked. Pauli principle will just forbid, will not allow this hopping. So it looks like actually this, there is extremely strong interplay between kinetic energy or one electron particle, so to say, excitations and magnetic background. That actually lies at the core of many of the complications. That's an old story, but simply maybe interesting for those of you who are closer to, say, elementary particle physics, that we get here actually a phenomenon which is similar to confinement. Why? Because here, actually, when I said that this electron, extra electron cannot move, I kind of cheated a little bit. Extra electron indeed cannot move, but extra electron can remain here, but its own electron can move. That will not forbid anything. It's even easier to see on the example not of electron, but of a hole. Same physics. Suppose I made the hole here, but then this electron can move here, and it will be kind of an electron here, but hole will move here. But let me do it slightly more realistically. Let me do it not in one-dimensional system, but in 2D, and then you will immediately see that in 2D and 3D we have very interesting situation. Suppose I created hole here, and I move this electron to neighboring side, so this one here, empty state here. Now I moved this one here, empty state here. Moved this one here, empty state here. But each time, if you just look carefully, you see that each time I move to the empty state, originally it would have been spinned down. Then I made a hole, and then I moved spin of a wrong sublattice, spin up. So I will have spin up here, then maybe it can move also here, it can move here, and have a different trajectory. But each time I moved spin, I reversed basically spin. So instead of anti-ferromagnetic coupling, here I have now
bad situation, because here I have wrong bond, ferromagnetic. Here I have ferromagnetic bond. Here I have ferromagnetic bond. Here I have ferrobond. And finally, the longer my hole or my extra electron travels in the antiferromagnetic lattice, the more it cost me. And it cost me something proportional to the length of this trajectory. So my effective looks like my hole is moving in effective potential, which is at most linear, and maybe even longer, because it doesn't only depend on my original position and my end position. It not only depends on the shortest trajectory, but it depends on the whole loop. And those of you who are in elementary particle physics will immediately recognize that this phenomenon is very similar to confinement. And not even that, but the fact that it depends on the whole trajectory, it's what in this quantum chromodynamic is called Wilson loop. I'm not really a very good expert on that, but the specialist told me that it's exactly the same as Wilson loop. And it was just discovered, well, we did it actually, it was long ago, my PhD, just, and then it was discovered many times. 69, I always wondered actually, when confinement appears in quantum chromodynamics, later than 69 or before, I don't know. Okay, but you see immediately that actually this interplay, extremely strong interplay between one electron spectrum or single particle spectrum and collective excitations or magnetic background, that actually lies at the core of many of the problems which are still not quite clear here. Question? Okay, if not, then I go on. Now, then after this background, let's go step by step to phenomena with charges, with spins, and with orbitals. Now, suppose we are now dealing with indeed with strongly localized electrons. So when electrons interact, interaction is larger than effective kinetic energy, potential energy is larger than kinetic energy. But in principle, I consider only situation until now when I have exactly one electron per side. But I can have also different situation. Maybe I can have situation due to doping or due to some special composition of material when I have not one but half electron per side, or maybe one third electron per side. In this case, actually, again, if kinetic energy would dominate, I would get a metal. But if interactions are stronger than kinetic energy, we may expect phenomena like charge ordering. And simplest one would be, for instance, simple charge ordering. For instance, I have N one half. I have one half electron per side, one electron per two sides. And then natural thing to expect that it will be simply just ordered like, say, checkerboard. And this phenomenon indeed was discovered, for instance, in some of these colossal magnetic resistance manganite half-doped when exactly one electron per side there appears this charge ordering. But there are many such systems actually, and very interesting, very rich. But it's not always situation is that simple. First of all, we may have systems in which it's not very easy to make, even for one electron per two sides, it's not very easy to make this simple structure. This simple structure will be easy to make in lattices which we call bipartite. Bipartite lattices means that it can be easily subdivided into two sublattices, and neighbors of one sublattice always belong to the other. Neighbor of this side of circle will always maybe cross. But very important class of systems are those which cannot be subdivided like that. That is actually a system which are called system with geometric frustration. And one of the best example, oldest example, is for instance magnetite iron 3 or 4. Structure is more or less like this. You have cube in which you have alternation of, say, metal, oxygen, metal, iron, oxygen, metal, oxygen, metal, oxygen. So metals are forming this tetrahedra. And next, such block will have the same structure but have only common corner. Again, I have metals, I will only keep just metals here. Okay? And now if I want, and in magnetite, if you count actually proper valences, then you understand that actually there is exactly the same situation. One electron per two sides, but how to dispose them, how to order them in this material, that's actually, there are very many ways and the system is heavily frustrated. Actually, there appears a real phase transition as a function of temperature. At 119 Kelvin, there appeared phase transition in which resistivity, that's kind of quasi-metal here, not very good metal, and it's definitely insulator here, and say conductivity goes like this, jumps by two orders of magnitude, and then goes like this. That's actually what is called Verweij transition. It was discovered in Holland by this guy by name Verweij just before the war, 38, I think, or something like this, 1938. And probably it was the first real insulator metal transition driven by temperature in this class of transition metal compounds. In principle, actually, this material is extremely interesting and extremely famous, I would say, and extremely important. Why? First of all, it's called magnetite, and it's not really accidental. This was the first magnetic material known to the mankind. It was discovered in old Greece, and there was a mountain somewhere in Asia Minor, which was magnesium or something like that. The very word magnetism comes from this word. Actually, it was known in old China, probably maybe it's 2,000 years or 3,000 years before that, and used for magnetic compasses. And it's also interesting that it's not really ferromagnetic, but it's what people call ferri or ferri magnetic. I never know what is better pronunciation. So you have, say, some spins up, some spin down, but more spin up than down. So you have net total magnetization. But it's not really ferromagnet. So first magnetic material known to mankind, probably the first real insulator metal transition, because all the other materials were discovered later on. And now it also turns out that it maybe also one of the first materials which combines ferroelectricity and magnetism, because it turns out that it's also ferroelectric. And that's actually not widely known and not really understood. And from point of view of charge ordering, as I told you actually, that's heavily frustrated situation. And initially, Verweij himself suggested that there is certain charge ordering here. But the particular pattern he proposed is not really right, and actually it turns out that the more accurate experiment you are doing to measure structure, the more complicated pattern of charge ordering you have to propose, to have to invent. It's still open question. The best solution was done maybe 2 years ago by the group in England, Paolo Radelli, one of the best crystallographers in the world. He was actually also in our conference here. And the structure which they proposed probably is almost right, but not completely, because it doesn't reproduce ferroelectricity. So still some problems here. Okay, now this charge ordering, there is also something complicated, or there may be some interesting phenomena even for simple lattices. Why? What is actually charge ordering in these simple lattices? Just let me just draw it on an example again of one-dimensional chain. When I say that there is charge ordering, I have more electron here, less electron here, it means that electron density is, for instance, if some extra electron density here and some depleted less electron density here. Again, more at this side, less at this side. More at this side, less at this side. It need not be exactly one electron here, zero electron here. It may be some partial charge distribution. That's what we may call, or sometimes call, charge density wave. And if it's very strong charge density wave, then we better speak about charge ordering. But if it's only fractional, partial variation of electron density, it's probably better to speak about charge density wave. And that is centered on size, because in this side I have more, and this side I have less. Now, but there is another possibility in principle. And those people who are working in one-dimensional systems, they are very well aware of this possibility. It may be that the sides are identical, but I have spy leg of the charge and this bond between these two sides, and then depleted electron charge and this bond. More electron here, less electron here. More electron here, less electron here. And now these sides are simply my ions, ionic cores, protons, for instance, for hydrogen. And if I make this charge density wave, you see that it's the same charge density wave, but it's simply shifted by phase. And this can be called site-centered charge density wave, and this simply bond-centered charge density wave. And then if I have more electron here on this bond, then of course my positive charges will move like this and create two sides bound to these bonds, and then another two sides bound to the bonds, and then another two sides bound to the bonds. So simply chemically, we may just say that we started with something like a regular chain of hydrogen atoms, and that's actually a form of hydrogen molecule. It's first step to formation of ordinary chemical bond. But in theory, in solid-state physics, we call it Pyrrhus transition. That's actually, it's known that one-dimensional systems are unstable towards this dimerization, which is called Pyrrhus transition. It makes system actually, instead of metal, it also opens a gap, make it insulating. Now, that's actually all nice, but who told me actually which system would develop this side-centered charge density wave, which develop bond-centered charge density wave? It turns out that actually there may be also a situation which is in between, intermediate. And this will be very interesting because it will be simultaneously ferroelectric. Now, why? Suppose I make this charge side-centered charge density. I have side plus, minus, plus, minus, plus, minus. This is like sodium chloride structure, Rockfall structure. There are some charges, but there is also some mirror planes, inversion symmetry. And if you like, there exists something like dipole moment from this positive side to this negative, but equal to also to the right. So this effective dipole moment completely cancel, and there will be no net dipole moment. Now, suppose I make bond-centered sides. I have this block, and I have again this short bond, this block, and I have again this short bond, this block. Now situation from here, from this side, to the right and to the left, they are different. But there is no charges here, because it's actually each of them is kind of neutral hydrogen. Again, like a molecular solid, molecular crystal, no dipole moment. But if I combine both, if I take, say, this short bonds, long bond, short, long, and then put positive charge here, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative, then each of these molecules will develop dipole moment in this direction, and this in this direction, and then this in this direction. This will be ferroelectric. And that's actually a proposal which we made together with one of the other participants in our program, Jeroen Vandenbrink, and my former postdoc, Dima Efremov. It's published in a couple of years ago. No, not apply the field, but I simply just studied certain particular situations, circle particular model, and I, the question was that I know that the system wants to develop charge ordering or charge density wave. But there are two possibilities. Either it may be side-centered like this, or bond-centered like this. Or it may be a combination of both. And that's actually interesting and strange thing, that solution turned out to be combination of both. And this solution, which if it's combination, then it's also simultaneously ferroelectric. And there are such systems, maybe not exactly what system which we had in mind, but there are very similar systems which become ferroelectric just because of that. There are some ferroelectric inorganic material in which indeed we have already dimers. And then there appears charge ordering on top of the dimers, and the system is simultaneously ferroelectric. It was studied experimentally by Nagy, Brazovsky, very good theoretician, and Pierre Monceau, that was maybe a few years ago, they discovered this ferroelectricity. And there are also some inorganic material which also show ferroelectricity due to this type. Okay, that's probably all I wanted to say about this charge ordering, and now a few words about multiferroic in general. That's actually we already just touched the point we just discussed, this church ordering, and then just I told you that there exists some possibility of link between charge ordering of normal type and ferroelectricity. Now, this field of multiferroic, actually, that's very new fashion. And maybe those of you who have been in our in our conference maybe already heard what I want to say now, but I just apologize before you. But it's kind of a sociological problem. Probably, I don't know what about other field, but in at least in condensed matter physics, actually, there are some topics which are the most fashionable one. But then the fashion changes maybe this time. And in particular, for instance, high-TC superconductivity was extremely fashionable in after discovery immediately. It's still very popular, but kind of declining already, internet declining. And then some new topics appeared, and very good way to test, to see what is the most fashionable is simply to look at the programs of March meeting of American Physical Society. And if you look at this March meeting, then I just looked at the years starting from 97, 99, 01, 03, say 2005, 2007. And I looked at simply at the program of America March meeting and counted not how many talks, it's impossible, but how many sessions devoted to a particular topic. And I normalized to the maximum, so it's a kind of number of sessions, but normalized to maximum. So its maximum will be one. So, superconductivity, high TC superconductivity, that was probably maximum was below 97, but I simply was too lazy to go below 97. But maximum, it went like this, and that was some decline. And then some 2007 was again, the number of sessions went up, but maybe simply because this total meeting was bigger, many more participants. Now, what took over? Starting here about, say, 97, 98, there appeared this colossal magnetoresistance manganites. Many people who worked on high-TC superconductors, then just they switched to this manganite because physics is rather similar, but phenomena are different. And manganites, that's actually what it is. It's, that's high-temperature superconductivity. Then colossal magnetic manganites, they reach maximum somewhere here. They just, they're above high TC, and then now they're also in decline, somewhat like this. And what took over recently, it was, what's another color? That was, okay, CMR, colossal magnetic resistance manganites. And now, starting from 2001, there appeared multiferroic business, goes like this, then there was nothing in 2003, and now it's kind of here. And that's multiferroid.
See, 2005, nobody was working.
2003, there was no session. 2005, already again session, and last meeting, it was seventh session, and it's still kind of going up. And I also mentioned also during our conference that actually this particular place, Santa Barbara, this KITP, or ITP it was at that time yet, played a probably important role in this new fashion, because we had a program a bit similar to the present one in 99. It was called, I think, Quantum Spin Systems. And then at that time, we organized kind of brainstorming discussion, and Nicola Spaulding was very important also person. And we just discussed, well, why ferroelectricity usually just mutually exclusive as magnetism and so on, and very hot discussion, and since then just this fashion started, and Nicola organized first special session on multiferroic in 2001, and then it's all fashion started probably from here, actually. It's really true, I think. At least experimentalists who really just were very instrumental in discovering this new multiferroic, that was Kimura, Tsuyoshi Kimura from Takura Group. He actually said that he started working on this after this listening to all these talks at this session in 2001. And that actually raised a new wave in activity in multiferroic business. And now the last point, I don't have much time, but I have about, say, maybe 10 minutes, yeah? about 10 minutes because I started a bit later, I will just switch to the last point about orbitals. That's actually, as I said, as far as I know, Leon and Jeroen van den Brink already spoke about orbitals something, but I simply just like this field and I think it's not a really finished field. There are always some surprises in this business, and I will just tell you what it is about and what to expect maybe. Orbitals. But again, I have to repeat probably some basics. We are the main material to which we apply now all these notions are transition metal compounds. Transition metal compounds like, for instance, titanium or vanadium, that's 3D series. Vanadium, if you remember periodic table, and somewhere I have, say, iron, some maybe even copper may belong to that if it's 2 plus. And then there are also 4D and 5D. So D means the following, that if you go back to atomic physics, and I told you that you have to go back to atomic physics, then L is equal to 2. So we have 2L plus 1 equal 5 different states times 2 per each of the state. I have two spins up and down. So altogether I have possibility to put 10 electrons. So I have 5 levels which are different from orbital, from L equal 2, 1, 0, minus 1, minus 2, LZ. 5 of them. And I can put electrons one after another. For instance, if I have only one electron, it's here. If I have 2 electrons, they usually go according to atomic, intra-atomic Hund-Rule coupling, going like this and so on. Now, these all 5 levels are degenerate in spherical symmetry for isolated ion. Typical situation in transition metals is not the only one, but very common situation is the one in which I have a transition metal sitting here in the center. And I have 6, for instance, oxygens surrounding it and forming a regular octahedra. That actually will be mine. This is my octahedra. So just regular coordination. And in this regular coordination, not all these levels are degenerate anymore. They are split in 2, 3 and 2. Now, what is this reason of this splitting? If you simply draw the shape of electronic cloud, electronic orbital, for instance, in these levels, these are cloud which is looks like this, and another cloud which looks like this. This goes mostly along Z orbital, and that's called Z squared. And this goes along X and Y orbitals. It's called X squared minus Y squared. That's actually the orbital which always is important in high TC superconductors, for instance. And if you just look at this octahedra, maybe I will just reproduce it again. Then I have negatively charged oxygen. Oxygen to minus star, simply speaking, right? And now I put this, my electron orbital, my electron cloud is like this. It rather strongly repels from this oxygen to minus. And that's why it cost me some energy. The energy is going up. But there are some other type of orbitals. For instance, another one, it will be x squared minus y squared will be the same, but electron cloud will be like this. Again, strongly repelling from this, this oxygen. But there are other types of orbitals which are like this. Oxygen are here, but the orbital is kind of looking not toward oxygen, but along diagonal. So electron cloud is directed away from negative charge oxygen. Repulsion is weaker. That's why the energy is lower. Now, that's actually one thing. And now I already mentioned that if I have now, if I know how many electrons do I have to fill, for instance, first electron. Suppose I have 3 electrons. One here, second here, third here. And what first electron will do? It can do different things. First of all, it can go up. That has to occupy higher length level, but spins are parallel. It's okay according to Hund-Sul coupling, but it costs you some energy. In principle, it can also do something else. It can go down. And this actually is also very important kind of phenomena. Whether I have, say, electron occupation according to Hund-Sul coupling or different Hund-Sul coupling. That's not really directly related to orbitals, but rather goes to spin physics, but it's important because here we are dealing with all this multiplet physics. Suppose I have these three-fold levels, five-fold levels, and I may have, say, for instance, six electrons. That's actually a realistic situation. Cobalt ion, cobalt 3 plus, is this type of ion. And it can exist in two states, one, two, three, four, five, like Hund-Sul coupling bonds, and then six here. Then you see that actually these spins are compensated, but 1, 2, 3, 4, total spin is equal to 2, strongly magnetic ion. But another state for the same D6 may be the following. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I lose my Hund-Sul energy gain, but I gain some energy because I put these two electrons at lower levels. But this will be spin 0 state, will be non-magnetic. So the same kind of ion may behave both as magnetic and completely non-magnetic. This is what we call sometimes high spin state, and this is what we call low spin state. And these phenomena do occur in nature, and not even just in some solids, but even inside our body. Because this is a situation for instance, for iron 2 plus. It also has the same configuration D6 and can exist in both states. And in our red blood cells, it's not really my field, but what I learned from some friends in biology, in our red blood cells, they just work as to transfer oxygen to our body. And during this transfer of oxygen, this hemoglobin, or I don't really know how to pronounce the name, during this uptake and release of oxygen, there occurs this spin state transition of iron from this state to this state. So actually, this phenomenon is really crucial for our existence, in a sense. Okay, fine, but that's actually something more connected with spins. And this also explained, by the way, why the word multiplets in the title of our program, moments and multiplets. And that's actually important, crucial, multiplets. And the last thing which I want to say maybe somewhat more about orbitals, that some funny things connected with real orbital ordering. Because, for instance, suppose that I still have the same situation when spins are indeed occupying a long Hund's rule, but in this case, my electron does not know which of these two orbitals to occupy, either this or this. And it can do both, or it can order somehow, and that's actually what people in old days called cooperative Antlr effect. I have no time to explain these things, but now as people more often speak about orbital ordering. Say, for instance, at high temperatures, electron kind of equally probability occupy these two orbitals, but at low temperatures, it's occupied only one particular type of orbitals, and suppose that it's occupied only this type of orbitals, or only this type of orbitals, then it will be better. This is electron cloud. Negative. And this is also a negatively charged oxygen. So if electron occupies this orbital, then it's better to move this to oxygen away. And just to conserve volume, this will go in. So it will be a kind of elongation. And this kind of hen and egg problem, I may say that I occupy these orbitals and because of that I induce distortion, or I can say that I induce distortion and because of that this particular orbital is occupied. But this, of course, occurs simultaneously, and it takes a form of structural phase transition. And that's actually, again, very rich part of physics. In many solids, we have different structural phase transitions. And almost never we know real microscopic reason. And here, it's actually one of the very few cases when we do know microscopic reason. You simply give me a chemical formula of material. I count how many electrons do I have. I see that, for instance, with so many electrons, system would be degenerate, and I tell you, aha, this guy should be distorted. And I even often can predict which direction of distortion. So that's very unique case. Another maybe case is some nesting, charge density due to nesting, but okay, that's a separate thing. But very rare case when I can really predict the nature of orbital logic. Now, and the last word which I want to say is that these orbitals are very strongly directional. And because of that, I can have a lot of very interesting effects, and some of them were already mentioned by Leon, as far as I know. In particular, this is actually two phenomena I won't mention, and that will be the end of my story. One of them is just because of this directional nature of orbitals, my effective dimensionality of my system may strongly reduce. So suppose I have cubic crystal here at the vertices. I have my atoms, transition metal atoms, and my orbitals are, in particular case I have in mind, they are doing something like this, the checkerboard ordering of this type of orbital. And here we see that along this direction they are pointing toward one another. And in this direction, this slope is pointing toward this, but another is perpendicular. And there is much stronger antiferrocoupling in this direction, so that material is cubic. But it's one of the best quasi-one-dimensional systems. That particular system I have in mind, potassium copper fluorine. One of the best one-dimensional magnet, although it's cubic. And, well, even more interesting thing occurs if I have partially filled T2G orbitals, but I don't have time to tell you about that. And the last point I want to say is the following, that suppose I have these type of orbitals, and suppose, well, that's of course may be different, but suppose they want to point toward one another. Now, for this pair of sides, they want to point like this. But if I have the same sides, but not along Z direction, but along X, they want to point like this. It's kind of like composites, and that's actually the model which we called long ago compass model. So that's goes like this. If you have enough money, you go to the shop and buy 10 compasses and put them kind of one after another, and then you know what will happen. Head to tail ordering. Okay, if you have even more money, just buy 10 by 10, 100 compasses, and then put them like this. And then these two guys, neighbors, wants to point like this, but from point of view of this neighbor, they rather prefer to point like this. And they don't know what to do. So it's kind of cubic lattice or square lattice, not frustrated in itself, but due to the directional nature of orbital, it becomes extremely frustrated. And mathematically, this will be the model which resembles rather strongly maybe what let's say Kitaev proposed recently, some model which is also useful for quantum computing, they say. I don't know, again, that's not my field. But the model will be like this. For the pair along ij along, say, parallel to x, I have interaction as x as x. Then for similar pair but parallel to y, I have interaction as y as y. And for the same pair parallel to z, I have SZ, SZ. Kitaev proposed the same model, but not on square lattice and not a cubic lattice, but on a honeycomb lattice and salt, exactly. But for this model on cubic lattice, its actually result is not known. It's even not known whether it's orders or not orders at all and how it orders and so on. So this actually the last thing which I wanted to tell you about. You see that actually it's not just some extra addition to make model realistic, but it's actually involve and allow you to consider quite interesting physical phenomena, both theoretical models, but also experimentally it's very important. In many cases we do have the dimensional reduction. In many cases we have effective orbital frustration in nominally non-frustrated lattice and so on. So actually, that's the end of what I wanted to tell you about. And that's, I hope that I managed to convince you that all this field is, it's as I said, actually, it's not an old field. It's, it's not a new field. But it's very active and producing surprises all the time. Okay.